This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Today with Amazon Business, Shannon Stuckey of Walburn Woodworking helped her team buy 63 circular saws.
Okay, Andy, take it easy.
Now she uses her time to focus on growing something big. Buy smarter, dream bigger. Visit Amazon Business, your partner for smart business buying.
You're listening to the most fraudulent F1 podcast with Dan, a.k.a. Engine Mode 11.
I secretly moonlight as Helmut Marko at race weekends.
And Blake, a.k.a. Brake.
Echo chambers of farts and idiots on Twitter after races.
It's the Engine Breaking F1 podcast.
Boom. Episode 9. Get it up, yeah.
Go on, lad.
Get it up there.
Yeah. Go on.
We've had
how
some,
we doing?
Yeah, we're good. We've had some banging guests the last two episodes, and now we're going to lower the tone again by having it just me and you.
Yeah. I mean, we had one of my favorite Formula One content creators, F1 Tony, a.k.a. Tony Cohen Brown. And then last week, my brother from another mother, Connor Daly, joined us for an episode after running into him in the paddock again in Austin. I was like, that's great. But you know what? Tonight's going to be a night. You've kicked the lurgy. You're sounding great. You look fresh. You've still got a beard on your face. And I'm looking forward to talking about all the shithousery over the last couple of weeks. It feels like, you know, all the stuff in the system that was going to go wrong, it's happened. Fallout is
everything
massive.
Is coming up roses for me,
yeah,
my friend.
Yeah, let's go. We also were talking before the podcast, Engine Mode 11 on Twitter, over 70K. Can we get a W, homies?
Big old fat W. I don't know why. Like we said, my content is just shite. But I appreciate the supporters of the shite. And if you listen to this podcast, you're also a supporter of shite. So thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Well, for anybody that doesn't listen to this podcast, who the fuck are you?
Oh, well, my name is Dan. I live in the Nidge, Stevenage. And for 6 years, I stole a living off of Red Bull Racing as a senior systems engineer until eventually
they found out
that I was a fraud and I did nothing. No, I left because I wanted to spend more time with my kids and that, which is why I've decided to abandon them and come and do a podcast instead.
I love it. Get wrecked, kids. No, don't do that. I mean, that's
okay.
That's pretty cool.
We're recording this on Halloween, and before we recorded this, I went out trick-or-treating. As you can see, I'm in my Red Bull Racing kit. I had some £20 notes hanging out my pocket. I went as the cost cap breach.
I guess we'll get to that, but it seems like they were only like 20 quid over something in the end, wasn't it? That's going to be interesting. But if anybody's new tuning into the podcast, Dan and I are two complete frauds. Dan and I met at Red Bull, but we never actually talked when we were at Red Bull. So I spent a couple years in the traveling circus as a trackside performance engineer. And now, then I went to work in the simulator as a simulator performance engineer, did some really cool shit, got to see some cool things. And now I'm doing content creation full time, which sounds weird. But there's a video. I don't want to sidetrack too much, but there's a video I made about quitting my job at Red Bull because I've achieved everything I wanted to do and I wanted to try something new. I wanted to do a challenge in my life. I wanted to, I really enjoyed making gaming content. And then I realized I'm passionate about Formula One and I know some things that I could share about. I don't know everything and I'm very open about that. That video is blowing up on every social media platform I've had in the past couple of months, but it's finally taken off on YouTube. So we just crushed 30,000 subs a week ago on YouTube. Then today, yesterday, 40,000 subs, and it looks like 50,000 by the end of the week. So there goes all of my first year of content creation and Formula One goals smashed.
Nice. Easy. GG.
So, so I'm now only making probably 10% of my previous salary. Mm. So I'm winning right now.
£40 a week.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, I just follow Adrian around because it costs him more money to lean over and pick up the 20-pound note, and I just kind of go hoover those up.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. His time's too expensive for that, so.
Yes, yeah, that makes perfect sense. But speaking of social media goals, did you know that the podcast, we've got over 5,000 followers on Twitter this week?
Wow.
Big up, big up, big up, big up. And the podcast has reached 35,000 listens.
Let's go! I mean, that's crazy. I mean, what are you guys doing? Like, imagine how low the bar must be for you guys to want to listen to our podcast. This blows my mind. But
it doesn't say all 35,000 listened all the way through. Let's be very clear. Yeah. 34,999 of them could be people listening to the first 10 seconds and going, fuck this, I'm out.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go. Get out of here. Crap podcast. But no, see, on a serious note, we don't usually go on about this that much, but anybody that's tuned in, interacted with us on social media, or just watched it, or shared the podcast with your friends, or your nan, or your grandpa, thank you guys very much, because you guys make this fun. And if you guys weren't listening to it, we'd probably have canceled it by now. But we're having a blast. And also, for anybody listening or watching this on YouTube, we do record this live on twitch.tv/BRRRAKE every week. So usually Mondays or Tuesdays we'll be live. So check us out. We'll post the notifications when we go live. But why don't we quit screwing everybody over? We're 6 minutes in and we haven't even talked about any shithousery, fraudulence, or drama.
Well, we still talking about ourselves, so that's quite fraudulent.
Not fair. Okay.
But
all right, you're
Mexico.
Welcome.
Well, before Mexico, how about all the news and drama?
Talk to me, bro.
Because
talk to me.
Boy, have we got a lot of it.
Well, what about news that doesn't have to do with Mexico this year?
Well, Mexico got extended until 2025. So, I mean, technically, that's not this year.
No. But, like, after this race, I think we've had a couple of really good Mexico Grand Prix that have been entertaining. This one, however, at the front of the field was shocking. It was so boring.
Yep.
But hopefully next season, the performance gap will close because we have had new regulations. Yes, these regs were meant to make the racing closer. But anytime you introduce new sets of regulations, you will have a shakeup. You will have teams spread out. And then hopefully by the time we get to the end of 2025, we don't have three-tier racing.
Mm. But, right, here, I was thinking about this earlier. Do we think Mexico's exciting because we go into it expecting about 400 cars to explode? And when it doesn't happen, we all sit there and think, well, this was shite.
Nah,
or
I wasn't really hoping.
Do we think the racing's actually genuinely good there?
We've seen a couple, like, I think everybody was too sensible today. There's a couple people taking a few L's, Gasman and Ricardo, for example. But, yeah, you know, that's not particularly malicious. It was just a little bit of bumping. I think the fact that we've effectively got, I was going to say three-tier racing, but we actually have four-tier racing, which I'll clarify shortly. So don't miss out on that. That's a very technical explanation there.
Okay. And before we move ahead any further, a quick PSA to say that if you can hear dogs barking in the background, that's mine, because obviously it's Halloween and trick-or-treaters are setting them off. I will try my best to shut them up, but bear with me. So yeah, moving on.
Well, I'm gonna have cats in here in a minute anyway, so
your cats
watching,
don't make any noise. They just really sit cute there and sort of lay on your table and
crash the stream and almost kill the recording. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that. I did forget about that. Well, which one was it that opened about 10,000 tabs on your computer? Sterling, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's a little shit.
Yeah. So yes, Mexico extended till 2025. Great, good. I don't hate the track and I don't particularly love it either.
Fair.
I like the stadium section just because I think that's vibes.
Yeah, the atmosphere on the podium. Like I watched a video on stream the other day from 2017 and I was probably 10 people from the front row at the podium ceremony in the middle of the baseball stadium. It was epic. Martin Garrix, the DJ set dropped and the bass was like ripping your chest apart. It was heavy. So that was very cool. That was very cool. And I think once the racing gets, the cars get closer in terms of overall performance, I think we could see some better races this year. Not particularly exciting as a Grand Prix, unfortunately.
No, but qualifying was good. And we'll go into that in a bit.
Yeah.
But qualifying was quite exciting. Second piece of news, which isn't so dramatic, Audi and Sauber have officially announced their link up for 2026. Now, if you're sitting there scratching your head saying, what, who are Sauber? That's who Alfa Romeo are if you peel off the sponsorship sticker. So
Peter Sauber.
Yes, Peter Sauber. Peter Kling. In Switzerland, aren't they, I believe? I can't remember. I think it's Switzerland. Yep. Hinwil or something? I don't know. Yep. Anyway.
That is 100% correct.
Alfa Romeo also announced that they will end the title sponsorship with Sauber at the end of 2023. But do not fear, because the gap between 23 and 2026, they'll still be running the Ferrari power units, but I'm not sure what they're going to brand themselves as, whether they're just going to continue as Sauber yet.
That's an interesting one because that's like, do they bring on Audi as a technology partner in the short term or what?
I don't know. I don't know how happy Ferrari would be to be on a car that's got Audi stamped on the side of it. Let's be honest.
I don't know how happy Audi would be to have their stamp on the side of a car running those engines.
Yeah, very true. Audi will start producing the power unit at one of their German factories in 2026. It's a works sponsorship / technical partnership with Sauber. Now, I know there were some rumors around that Audi were looking to buy into a team earlier in the year, but I've not seen any mention if they've actually bought into Sauber as part of this.
That's super interesting because like Porsche wanted a big chunk of the Red Bull deal and that's where that thing fell through. So that's a very, I think we're watch this space for any developments on what's actually happened with that. But
yeah, Sauber are, or have been in the past fairly recently struggling a little bit with the older money. So perhaps maybe there may have been some buyout, or not buyout, but investment from Audi. But this isn't the first time Audi and Sauber have worked together. Did you know that, Blake?
Ooh, no, I actually didn't know that.
They have worked together between the years of 2006 and 2014 because Audi, when they were running their LMP1 diesels at World Endurance, were using the Sauber wind tunnel.
Ooh, okay.
So
I remember that.
There's an underlying relationship there already.
I saw one of those Audis in Austin at the the Masters Endurance race. So it's a bunch of old WEC cars. There was one of the old open top Audis. It was gorgeous. You know, the silver red shell.
Yes, the R8.
R8. I kept saying R18 the other day, but it's an R8 TDI.
Yeah, they sound the car makes wild, don't they?
It makes no noise, man. Yeah. I saw the car at the Petit Le Mans, and the car's going around at the back end of the track. There's a double right-hander. You hear the tires on the tarmac. You do not hear the engine. Then you hear like a Maserati or a Corvette or a Panos just rip by, and the V8's ripping your guts apart. But then you hear this, and you're like, what was that? That was probably McNish.
yeah, exactly. Before I got into F1, I went to Le Mans a few times and I saw them there, and that was an interesting experience. Like you say, the sound was very different.
Can I put myself on fraud watch this week?
Yeah, 100%. Why? What have you done?
I've never been to Le Mans.
Oh, I don't think that's fraud watch as such. I think a lot of people haven't actually been.
But I'm a motorsport enthusiast. And I've been in the UK for almost 12 years, and I've never made the journey to Le Mans. But to be fair, my first 7 years, I was flat out with first year in formula student when I was in uni. And then 6 years, I was traveling full time to all the races. So I was like, the fuck am I going to go to Le Mans for a weekend? I've spent 20 plus weekends away.
Yes, yeah, I can understand if you're working in F1, then perhaps maybe spending your time off going to another race isn't quite the ideal holiday. But next year is the 100th anniversary, so I'm going to try to get along to that. And if you want to come and share a tent with me, then...
Oh, yeah, dude, I've got lethal farts, though.
Have you? Are you Big Spoon or Little Spoon?
Middle Spoon.
Middle Spoon, okay. There's going to be a third wheel we don't know about yet. Okay, cool.
Sarah said she's not coming, so I'm not sure who it is.
It's going to be someone from the pod. We'll let you do a competition. If you want to get sandwiched by me and Blake, then hell, enter the competition. Let's go.
That's disgusting.
What happens in France stays in France.
Like, but like, to be fair, though, just as a little bit of a thing that we could manifest now, I really feel like some content in Le Mans next year could be fucking golden, man. Do the road trip, do a vlog, hang out, meet up with some people. Somebody in the live stream said that the third wheel is Helmut Marko.
Yeah, okay. Sure. He's got to pay me a lot of fucking money. He's got some spare, I think, by the sounds of it, but...
Anyway, I'm gonna let's get back on track.
Yeah.
What do we got? But like, seriously though, manifest that chat. Engine braking fraudcast at Le Mans 2023.
Yep. I'll be in the background, drunk, rolling around on the floor while Blake tries to do a serious content creation.
No, we're gonna get cancelled, bro.
Sweet. Sweet as a nut. So yeah, sorry, that was Audi and Sauber, which turned into a Helmut Marko sandwich. I'm not sure how we got there, but definitely leaving that one on podcast.
Yeah, definitely don't edit that. Don't ration the passion, baby.
No. Red Bull decided to boycott Sky Sports, which I thought was hilarious. So I saw this blowing up all over social media and I really fucking struggled to understand what was going on here. So I'm gonna try and break it down what's happened.
Break it down.
Oh yeah, I see what you did there. Very good, very good. Right. So Ted Kravitz, in his post US Grand Prix notebook. So if you don't know who this is, it's Ted Kravitz works for Sky Sports, and in the UK they do like I think it's like a 30-minute segment post race where he walks down the paddock and just sort of gives you a rundown of what happened and whatnot through each team. So,
the notebook starring Ted Kravitz.
Yeah. Which,
or Ted's notebook.
The savage rumor, or what I was told, was that he doesn't actually write the notes in that notebook. But I've seen people come back at me on Twitter say, giving me evidence to the contrary, so I'm not sure. Well, that's a sick rumor that I'll start.
I've seen him in the paddock writing in that notebook.
Okay.
But maybe it's one of those things, he has a ghostwriter where they write the notes and he just traces over it.
Possibly, yeah. So yes, during this segment he did post US Grand Prix, he said something about how Max's title how the title was stolen from Lewis Hamilton in Abu Dhabi, and something about Lewis is an 8-time world champion. Right, so first and foremost, any sensible person, I don't care if you're a Max fan or not, if you're probably going to turn around and say, you know what, Abu Dhabi 2021 was a bit of a shit show. I'll give you that.
A little bit of one. It was a huge shit
show. Exactly. So, but then no, Christian sort of just apparently, then we heard that all Sky Sports media were getting boycotted. There was no comments from any of the drivers or Christian.
Not just UK Sky Sports. No, it was all of them.
Correct. So Sky Sports also have Sky Italy and Sky Germany. Yeah. They also got boycotted, but didn't understand why, which I think is hilarious. Okay. They even tweeted the team, I think, basically saying, what's going on? Why have we been included in this?
Entschuldigung. Entschuldigung.
Achtung. Schnell. Christian said there were some derogatory comments made, so we took a break from Sky for this race. Max was upset. We were upset. And we made the decision to stand together as a team. Some of the commentaries are fair, but some pieces are sensationalist. And saying we robbed anyone of the championship, as was said in Austin, is going too far. It is not impartial or fair or balanced. We have said our piece and we will go back to normal next race. Right, here we go. Load it up. Here's Dan's hot take.
Go on.
I couldn't give a flying fuck about this. This is so fucking playground and petty. I don't give a shit. Sky are mid, so who gives a fuck? Right? Sky are just the Waitrose version of WTF1. Right.
Oh, I see what you've done there. Oh, Maddie's gonna love you for this.
I really don't give a fuck. Like, Who fucking cares if Ted says that? And saying that it's not impartial. Find me a fucking commentator or sports media, whatever, that is impartial. There isn't one. Even us, like when we talk, we say we're ex Red Bull. We've probably got some rose-tinted goggles on.
Absolutely.
I don't know. It just seems fucking drama for drama's sake.
It's childish. But I think one of the things that Max touched on, and I don't know where I stand on this, because I'm with you. Actually, I could probably not give a fuck. Like, I really couldn't. But there's a lot of shit fighting, and people are just like, it's just like the Twitter is a cesspit. It's terrible. It's disgusting. You need a hazmat suit to even fucking open your web browser in the morning. But implying that Red Bull have, you know, deliberately cheated, that they stole the championship and all this stuff. Do not, like, I don't understand why people are fans. And in this instance, I think Ted is a super fan and he loves Lewis. But that's fine. I don't mind any of that. It's just the fact that it's like saying that you guys fuck this, you guys cheat. It's like, you need everybody that's upset needs to direct their distrust and their disinterest towards the FIA, not the team.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you turn it around. Flip the roles, right? If that had happened in the opposite way, people would be mad at the other team. But still the problem is the FIA and the officiating and the lack of clarity and the inconsistency. That is the problem. But I will say, if you're one of those sad fucks that's going on Ted Kravitz's Instagram and leaving him hate messages and abusing him, you're a loser. There's no room for that. Like, yeah. That is, like, if you don't agree with somebody, do not go at them. Like, yeah, there's, so be it.
There's banter, right? Which is what we have. And then there's just hate. And there's just... Yeah. Now, what's the point of hate?
Yeah.
You're getting too worked up over a sport that doesn't give a fuck about you.
Yeah. Just ask the drivers how they feel about you. Tell them your name first and say, hey, do you know me? And they're like, never fucking heard of you, mate.
No. Nope.
Like, I don't...
Daniel
I don't
Ricciardo care if you... didn't even remember you, did he?
Well, fucking bastard, man. That was classic, Dan. And if anybody's wondering what that video was, I did a little promo with F1 22, the game, and Danny Rick challenge, and he challenged me to beat his hot lap. I couldn't, and I had to go anyway, so that's why I packed my bag, because I knew I was mid. But he blasted me. He pretended he didn't remember me, but then described everything about me. Dork. But anyway, let's bury that, because I'm not too interested in that. And, like, you know, if a commentator says some shit about you, that's fine. If they're lying, that's a problem. And if they're entertaining,
yeah,
you know, like defamatory false narratives, that's one thing. And I don't think they're doing that. I think you can interpret what Ted said several ways. And it's just like, if you're annoyed about it, so be it. And you have the right to cut them off if you want to. But yeah.
It's a very British loving at Sky Sports. And I think all they're doing is just sort of, you know, putting their flag on the mast and saying, you know, we are, what they call it, Brit-fosy? I don't know. Either way, whatever, fine. Sky's shit anyway, so if you don't like it, I strongly suggest you don't subscribe to them anymore. You get a VPN and get F1 TV Pro, because it's far superior.
F1 TV is fucking sick.
And we get to enjoy Sky Sports for like another, 7 years or whatever it is. Now they've got their new exclusivity deal. Anyway, sorry, I went off on a rant there. Basically,
there we go.
Fuck Sky, passion. Big up F1 TV. It's all a bit mountain out of a molehill and a bit dramatic, so whatever. But it's okay, because Christian said in Brazil we're going back to normal, so it's just for this race.
Good.
Now I've got that rant out of the way. Are we ready for another one? Well, I don't know necessarily it's going to be a rant.
Nah, this is
the big one. And it's so big, I've had to put it on a separate notes page.
Wow.
Right. It's the cost cap saga.
Let's just rip through it. Like, I feel like everybody knows about it. What's the headlines of this one, and like, what's your take on it? Because I think that's what people want to know.
So, on the Wednesday, the 26th, so the Wednesday of Mexico, the FIA and RBR came to an agreed breach agreement, which I think we sort of knew that was coming. And we're going to break it down. So here we go. Red Bull Racing's submitted costs for 2021 were $114,293,000. Now, the cap was $118,036,000, whatever. So
they were basically effectively $4,000 or $4 mil,
essentially.
Yeah, I thought they were $4 mil under. Yeah.
But then the cost cap administration issued them a procedural breach because there was some inaccurate documentation. And basically Red Bull have inaccurately excluded or adjusted some costs amounted to $5.6 million. So these costs include, they overstated excluded costs concerning catering services, which is one of the rumours that was going around, wasn't it? Costs concerning employer social security contributions. Now, for our US listeners, I'm not really sure what that would translate to.
Social security would be like, yeah.
Is it the same?
Like tax.
Yeah, like a tax off your pay. Costs pursuant to non-F1 activities. Costs in respect to bonuses for the employers. Understatement of relevant costs in respect of a gain on disposal of fixed assets by failing to make the necessary upwards adjustment. Don't know what that means. I don't give a shit either. If you know what that means, big up yourself. Costs pursuant to apprenticeship levies. So in the UK, if you take on apprenticeships, you get like a tax break or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think that's related to that. This one was interesting. I thought, understatement of relevant costs concerning the cost of use of power units. But then the next point, they say clerical error in respect of Red Bull Racing's calculation of certain costs recharged to it by Red Bull powertrains.
So basically, they expense something wrong, and then they receive the bill for it for the wrong things or something like that, it looks like.
There's a lot of clerical errors in this, and there's a big one I'll get to in a minute. And the other ones were certain travel costs and costs of maintenance. And what they mean by that is maintenance around the Milton Keynes campus, you know, like cleaning facilities.
Did they ever fix that one toilet upstairs?
The one that always blocked?
Yeah.
No.
It's been blocked for... like 4 years, you know the one.
Yeah, oh yeah, everyone knows it. So once they added that 5.6 million of costs that they'd incorrectly done to their original 114 million, it turns out they were 1.6 over that 118 million by 1.8 million, which is 1.6% of the cost cap. I'm sorry, guys, if this is really, you're struggling to keep up, but this is how bad it is. It's a nightmare. But then this is the fun bit, right? So there were 1.8 million over, but the FIA actually turned around and said to Red Bull Racing, if you actually correctly applied a notational tax credit within that submission, you would have only have been over by 432,000, which is 0.37%. So hilariously, the FIA did not only just say to them, actually, you've calculated this wrong, and you've gone over. They also turned around and said, actually, you could have been a lot more under if you calculated this tax rebate correctly, which I thought was hilarious. So in the end, it turns out they have a minor overspend breach of that £432,652. Now, the punishment for the incorrect...
Just to put that in perspective, people are like, they're going to be 7 million over. they're like less than half a million over, which is still over. So there's a punishment for it.
Yes. So for the incorrect documentation in regards to the costs, yada, yada, that's the $7 million fine, which this is hilarious. I like how they've done all these figures in pounds, but the fine's in dollars. $7 million, they've got to pay that to the FIA within 30 days. That doesn't come out of any cost cap, future, past, present, which I thought was another amusing little...
Is it going into Menicali's pocket?
Well, and I understand this. When you have to pay a monetary fine to the FIA, it goes to their FIA road safety charity thing they do.
So that's like where they buy bottles of wine after the races on the yachts.
Probably,
and invite the team principals.
Yeah. Basically, they're the ones that are going to be buying the really posh sandwiches now.
Yeah, fuckers.
But because of that £432,000 being over, that goes into a minor sporting penalty, which is the 10% reduction of aero testing for 12 months from the date of the agreed breach agreement. So that's now, basically, from a year from that Wednesday. Now, aero testing includes, obviously, the wind tunnel, but it also includes CFD testing, which I think a lot of people were overlooking.
It's equivalence, basically. You get so many aero testing units, and depending on how you apportion your wind tunnel and CFD time, there's a sliding scale of which you can do that. So,
yep. And they also have to pay all the costs associated with the ABA, which when you have a $7 million fine, I don't really think they're going to notice that part as such.
No.
So, yeah, I reached out to a few people in different teams as well, because when you've worked in F1, you do know people in places that have done aero or work with aero. And I said, like, what 10% reduction in aero and CFD, like, how bad is that? And it was kind of split down the middle. So some people say it's not really the end of the world, while others have said they're going to drop out the top three. So no one really knows what effect this is going to have. So
yeah.
I await with bated breath. Me personally, I think this punishment is fine. It makes sense. Look, if they're a pound over, they're a pound over. It is what it is.
Yep.
Right. Take it on the chin. But I ran a public opinion poll on Twitter, right? Which, granted, ooh, I know I've got a lot of heavy Red Bull bias in my Twitter following. So
some stands.
You know, let's just say that outright.
What's Stan's last name, by the way?
Smith. Stan Smith. So, yeah, with that bias in mind, we got 16,500 votes. 12.7% said it's harsh. 45% said it's about right. And 42.3% said it's too lenient. So, again, even Twitter's a bit split down the middle, that it's about right or it's a bit too lenient.
Of those 16,500 people, how many of those do you think were qualified to make an assessment on that, understanding the significant impact of equivalent aerodynamic development hours and so on?
Exactly the same percent of people that are on this podcast now that are qualified to make that sort of judgment, and that's 0%.
Correct. Correct.
I don't know. You don't know. Nobody fucking knows.
No. We'll see. And the other thing to keep in mind as well is it's nothing to do with the penalty, but the new rules regarding wind tunnel and aero development. There's a sliding scale. So if you finish first, you get less time than whoever finishes second and third. And if you finish down in like seventh and eighth, you get more than the baseline. So you get a lot more. So there's going to be a big difference between Red Bull and whoever finishes second in the championship this year, because Red Bull are getting 10% less than that. So, the thing to take note of, though, is the FIA stated the Red Bull appeared to have done all this stuff correctly. They've been transparent. They haven't hidden anything. And Red Bull thought they were under. And it bothers me. It's like, why was there not clarification sooner? You know, like,
I think the whole process has taken far too long.
Yeah.
And I think the FIA are partially to blame with some of the chaos they've caused by just saying Red Bull are over the breach or committed a breach. See, even my dogs are angry about it.
Fucking
little shitbags.
FIA. But they basically threw it out there into the world and
then
left
just disappeared
it
for like 3 weeks. Yeah.
They've done themselves no favors, because at the end of the day, Red Bull will get penalized, and they have been. Everything's happened, but all they did was just literally, they're like, man, the season's really fucking boring. Why don't we talk with Netflix and kick off a stink bomb and drum up some interest in a championship that's fucking...
Let's forget to carry the one on a few calculations. Let's not claim back the tax correctly and give people something to get their teeth stuck into. Yeah, it all seems fine to me. So I think that it will not hinder them too much. And another thing to say is the 2023 car, most of that's going to be done already. So for the start of 2023, it's not going to really affect them. It's going to be more sort of that in-season development as they go along.
Yeah.
So we might not see so many upgrades towards the end of the year. And we might see a questionable start for the 2024 car. They'll have to prioritise what they want to do. 2023 in-season upgrades or 2024 car. So, yeah, we'll see. But in the ideal world, what I hope as a fan happens is that it brings them all closer together and we actually get a proper ding-dong fight because I'm just going to whisper it. Even though I'm a massive Red Bull fan, season's been a bit boring, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there's been drama, but not really the right kind. And it makes me look back and actually miss last season. I know everybody got super toxic because fans can't deal with the fact that drivers make mistakes sometimes, or they crash, or their driver doesn't get along with their other driver. So, you know, just a lot of really mature people that understand sport and can appreciate all that goes into it.
Yeah. We don't want peace. We want problems.
Yeah. I want that. I want competition.
Yeah. Bring it on. So that's it really for major news points.
Nice. Should we get into the weekend then?
We should.
Got the Mexican Grand Prix. Fortunately, FP1 and FP2 were kind of shit sessions, so
they would
not really. No.
But just for you, I've still taken some notes. So,
ooh, I would love that. I've just got those now.
Yeah, because I was bored on my work today, I decided to rewatch FP1, FP2, FP3 qualifying and the race. So I smashed flat that out today, in mate. One day. Yep. So thank you very much for my company that paid for me to do that.
Cheers, lads.
Yep. FP1, right. I noticed when Vettel was in the box in his Aston Martin, his steering wheel had a track map on it. I've never seen that before.
I haven't seen that in a while. Not since they got the PCU8 dashes, you know, with the big square screen on the steering wheel.
Yeah, it was on usually, that.
Yeah, usually the... a digital map.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen... teams have been doing that.
I didn't know if that was a thing. Is it just a map or is it a driver tracker?
No, it's just a map. It's just a reference. They put it in a display position on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
And if they're stationary and the car is plugged in, it'll throw
it was on
a map up.
It was on the umbilical cord, so yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. Didn't know that. So there you go. I'm glad I asked that. FP1, we had a few newbies or whatever you want to call them, young drivers. Logan Sargeant in the Williams. This is the funny thing about this, right? So if you do 100 kilometers in an FP1, you get a super license point, right?
Yeah.
Logan Sargeant really needs some super license points.
Yeah, he does. So he can get in that Willys next year, right?
Yeah. So you need 100 kilometers to get that super license points. How many did he do in FP1, Blake?
Like just over 99.
96 kilometers.
He needed one more lap.
Pretty much, yeah. So he missed out on that super license point. Well done, him. Liam Lawson was in the AlphaTauri, but that didn't really go to plan because he had to pull over with a PU issue, and then his brakes rather spectacularly caught fire in the stadium section. Nick De Vries was in the Mercedes, but then he became Nick Debris.
Pirellis are scared of debris.
Yes. Jack Doohan was in the Alpine. He had to stop early due to a PU issue. A sign of things to come, I think, for that team. Fittipaldi was in the Haas. Yeah, foreshadowing. Fittipaldi was in the Haas. Then he had to stop, caused a red flag. Because he had to stop, I think, at the end of the straight because a bit of smoke started coming out for the engine. That would turn into a ice change, which means Magnussen would have to take a penalty for the race. And Guanyu Zhou basically got stuck because his gearbox refused to change gear. And that was pretty much all we had in FP1. But we had quite a lot of reliability concerns in there, which is something that we get at Mexico.
Yeah. Don't tell them about the air molecules. They're sick of Ted talking about the air molecules.
Oh, yeah. Basically, you're at higher... I'm going to explain it in my way. Deal with it.
One.
You're at a higher altitude. The air is less dense.
Yeah.
So you can run a fat load of wing on your car because the air is less dense, there's less drag. Because of that, it also means it's more inefficient at cooling.
Yep.
So there's more concerns over brakes, PU, and things like that. Anyway.
And another thing that tends to happen is because there's fewer air molecules, the turbos need to spin faster. to get all the air in the engine, because in an altitude with a turbo engine, you do not lose as much power, or you probably lose very little power, unless your turbo can't spin fast enough because of its sizing. And that's a little bit of foreshadowing
for
Ferrari.
Well, yes, in this instance, but in the past, the reason why Red Bull always used to do so well is because the Honda PU had a larger turbo.
A big old blower.
Than the Mercedes, so it could cope better with higher altitude.
Like this? No, I'm just kidding, I'm not going to do that.
Wow, that was beautiful.
I've got to kick the cat out. He's in like super lover mode. Give me 30 seconds.
Okay, I'm just going to bang on with FP2 while he throws his cat out. So, pre-practice 2 was another one of the Pirelli extended tyre sessions. Which is a bit boring because they're not allowed to make setup changes or practice starts. They have to stick to a baseline. So FP2, it was 90 minutes. It was a bit dull. Not a lot really happened. But Charles did have his rather large shunt in FP2, didn't he, Blake?
Oh, yeah, he smashed it up, ripped the back off that thing almost, didn't he?
He did. A big old shunt for him. No penalty or anything because everything was salvageable, I believe. And Guanyu Zhou, after breaking down in FP1, decided to break down again in FP2.
No, dude.
With a hydraulic
issue.
He's
so unlucky, man. I really like him, and he's so damn unlucky. And yeah. He's extremely fashionable as well.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's got drip, man.
Yeah, hella drip.
Hella drip.
I will say, though, I really hate how the FIA have let the teams get involved with the tire testing. They're like, oh, we can't afford testing because this and that. And it's like, well... Then they're like, all right, well, then we'll just probably say, well, we need to test for next year because we're going to go to lower blanket temperatures. And they don't allow any time in the season for testing. The team's like, oh, it's going to cost engines and all this other stuff. It's like, just fucking make up a rule. But like, tire testing in FP2 is bullshit. It's so bullshit.
Yes.
And so useless. It's a waste of time. It's terrible to watch. It's not fun. And I fucking hate it.
It screams to me of, oh my God, we forgot we have to make a new compound next year. Can we do a tire test?
100%. Like,
and I wouldn't be surprised with Pirelli if that wasn't far from the truth.
All they need to do is fork out the fucking cash and buy a mule car from someone next year. And they're not going to do it because they're.
They used to have one, didn't they?
Yeah, they did back in the day, but they need to fucking fork out the cash and buy a test car because how else are they going to develop tires? Because teams aren't going to agree to do anything that's going to cost them cost cap. So unless the FIA figures this out, we've got the next 2 years. Next year, lower blankets. The year after, no blankets. They need some testing.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. That was that. FP3. There wasn't really much to say about it, really. The only thing that I noted down was Mercedes did like a 1-2 towards the end, and they looked quite significantly quicker than other people. So was that just a glory run, do you think?
Yeah, they were showboating because in qualifying, nobody approached those times until Q2.
So you think they turned it up a little bit or underfueled it?
Or something. And maybe there's a good reason for doing that. So I don't think it was all engine because that's a lot of power to turn up. I think they might have run lower fuel because often things that happen, you don't see people doing it too often in FP3. They usually leave a bit of fuel in the car. It's probably somewhere between 20 and 40 kilos of fuel in P3 for a low fuel run. But what they could have done is said, usually when we take the fuel out, we have different balance problems. And they're like, right, let's set up the car for qualifying. So let's see what the car's like on fumes, fuel it for 2 laps. And to make the most out of it, because the fact that nobody got even remotely close to those lap times until Q2.
Yeah, well, so the possibility that they did that for some balance issues or to investigate some balance during qualifying leads us nicely into qualifying. And
the next session.
Mercedes were looking awfully quick in qualifying.
Absolutely, yeah. And in Q1, that was emotional. I mean, Vettel with his disappointed Q1 radio message.
Oh yeah, we got the message again, didn't we?
I'm sad, but yeah. But he did the same lap time identical to Mick in the Haas.
Yes, he did. But I believe the way it works is because Mick did it first, he technically is the position above Seb.
Correct.
But it doesn't matter because they were both out in Q1 anyway. Yeah. So
somebody popped a lap in like late in that run and dunked them all.
Yeah. Hamilton was fastest in Q1, I believe. So a bit of hopium there for the Merck fans. I know there's some of you listening and you are going through it this year. Max did an extra outlap, I noted down here. Was you aware of this?
They've been doing that a couple times.
It looks like we got another instance of it again in Q1.
So they do a outlap, slow lap, push lap, or they might have aborted. I didn't know if he had a fast sector one or not. So they do that sometimes where they do an outlap and then a push lap, and it has something to do with, I'm assuming, the tires. I guarantee it's the tires, but
yeah. So yeah, out of Q1, we lost Latifi, Albon, Stroll, Vettel, Mick. It's kind of the usual crowd, really, isn't it? I don't think anyone's that surprised with that bunch.
No.
Q2, again, nothing really happened in Q2 apart from Hamilton was fastest again. At this point, I was starting to think, maybe.
We've got a DEFCON 4 on the beard. And if anybody's listening to the podcast for the first time, you haven't heard it before, if Mercedes win a race this year, Dan is shaving his beard off after he plays Father Christmas in December.
Yep. So the beard was starting to twinge a little bit at Q2.
Did you talk to it at all?
The beard? Okay. No, I just stroked it a little bit.
Yeah, fine.
Blasted it with nicotine and coffee.
Hell yeah.
It's what all content creators are running on.
I'm just running on sadness.
I don't have any sad music available to play for that, I'm afraid, but yeah.
Oh, I'll have to get some on the soundboard.
Okay. Q3. Hamilton lost his first time due to track limits. So his second run basically had to be a good one. Otherwise, he was in trouble because he didn't have a banker lap.
And it was faster than the track limit one as well.
Yep. But it looked close between Mercedes and Max. Both the Mercedes were trading purple sectors with Max. Yep. But then Max just dunked like 0.3 of a second on them, which I thought was hilarious after all that.
So looking at it, I think he probably didn't get his sectors all together. And then in Q3 final run, he finally smashed it in. George and Lewis did have a little bit of time. They didn't put their perfect sectors together on that final lap. But I mean, they're still a couple tenths off, man. Not too shabby. It's the closest we've seen them since Hungary, where Russell was on pole.
Yeah, and that still seems wild to me that even back as far as Hungary, Mercedes managed to get a pole this year. Because let's not beat around the bush. The W13 has been a bit of a shitbag this year. But this is what happens when you call your car or reference the number 13 in your car. Because
RB13 was dog shit.
Yep. I was about to say, let's go back to the happy memories of the RB13.
Dude, the tagline for that was unlucky for some. It's like, for us. This is a shitload of DNFs. Oh my God. Oh,
Fun times.
Yeah. But speculate real quick. I will speculate why Mercedes are so quick. So the trend so far this season, let's take from Hungary forwards, because earlier in the season, there were a lot of other issues. Seems like they've sorted a bunch of those issues with sea mammals. The W13 tends to go well at high drag, low efficiency circuits. So when you tend to put more wing on and the car is, you know, you could, like, especially tracks like Hungary, where you just put a big, nearly Monaco spec rear wing on it, the biggest thing you can. This one as well. It doesn't matter that the top speeds are high. It matters in terms of the efficiency where they're at. So that seems like a factor. So Brazil's next. It's another high altitude circuit, but it's not the lowest, or it's not the high downforce track. So I expect them to go reasonably well.
Do you expect them to be as close?
I don't think so. I don't think as close, but at the same time, I think we should talk about the race, because there's a lot of implications on the compromises of the cars qualifying versus race.
Hell yeah, let's get on to the race, because we're 45 minutes into the podcast and we're not even talked about the race yet.
The race is kind of flows, man. Should I kick this one off?
Hit it. Go for it.
Hit it. Pre-race, we got the grid. Everything sorted. Qualifying was exciting, actually. I was excited about qualifying, and it finished with a bang.
I think it was
Verstappen on pole. I was not expecting that, honestly, especially after seeing... I think I got a little bit blinded by the showboating in P3. But then as soon as, like, I was like, wait, they're not doing those lap times yet. I was like, okay, a little showboating. But the pre-race, Stroll had earned himself a three-place grid penalty after he launched Alonso into lower orbit in Texas. And Magnussen changed some power unit components, so he had a five-place drop for the race. Then we got to the race start. The bags, we call them. The blankets come off of the black and round things. What do we notice? Red Bull soft?
Yeah, we got some
Mercedes
split strategies. Well, not split strategies, but different sort of strategies throughout the teams at the start. And this is where my excitement first started building. Because I thought, oh, here we go. This is going to be a good one.
Go on, lad.
Go on, lad. So, yeah, we had the Red Bulls on softs and the Mercs on mediums.
Mediums.
I didn't even fucking pay attention to what Ferrari were on because I think we already knew quite early on this was going to be painful for them.
They're in the... Ferrari are where Mercedes have been most of the season in no man's land.
Yeah, so they could have been on wets for all I know. I didn't really pay a huge amount of attention. Oh, but someone just mentioned this in the chat. Before we had the race start, we had the Mexican F1 theme music. Did you hear that?
Oh, the mariachi theme. It was so good. Oh, it was spectacular. If you haven't heard it, look it up because
big fan.
That was magnificent.
Yeah, I did enjoy that.
Just before we've even left the grid, as soon as the covers come off, we're like, oh, okay. We get to the race start. Everybody's got a reasonable-ish start. Hamilton gains a spot, and I'm really disappointed in George Russell.
Yeah, he dropped back two places, was it?
It's not that he dropped back two places, it's that he didn't dive bomb
anybody. Well, no, there was no terrorism. He said he was going to... dial down the terrorism, I believe, in one of his interviews.
DEFCON 4 on the terror level.
Yeah, he's moved on to Hearts and Minds, Operation Hearts and Minds now.
Did you see his line in the press? He's like, if it was anybody except for Hamilton, I would have run them off the track. I was like, go on, lad. He's not hiding anything. He is true to himself. His stare frightens me, but you know what?
George. You're in an F1 car and I'm not, so...
Yeah, exactly. Fucking get in there. Stroll had a stinker of a start. Again, he's been doing really, really good on race starts and restarts. Stroll up five. Albon and Vettel up two as well.
So this thing with Stroll, I think this is what I was referencing to the other week. Stroll has these moments, right, where he does things like this, like he'll make up five places at the start or whatever. And then I'll turn around and say, you know what? Stroll's actually not that bad of a driver. But then he'll have a complete bozo moment like we saw in Austin where he went into low orbit or sent Alonso into low orbit. And then you think, oh, yeah, that's Stroll, yeah.
Yeah.
He's so inconsistent.
He balances out, man. I think he's balancing out.
So, yeah, anyway.
And after the race start, like, we're just watching Hamilton on the back of Max. We're watching... Russell following Perez and then Ferrari kind of disappear off the back of that train. And it's kind of a four-group race at this point. We've got Red Bull and Mercedes, who are racing each other on merit, albeit on different strategies, which is interesting. We've got Ferrari by themselves, completely by themselves. We've got everybody else, and then we've got Nicholas Latifi. After his first stop, he does not rejoin the pack, and he finishes two laps down, so we don't need to speak of him again. He's had a terrible weekend, unfortunately, for the lad. But the front of the race is the most interesting. When there's a bunch of stuff happening in the back, and I will get back to that. The front of the race is the most interesting, though, because we're looking at this, I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking Red Bull soft, Mercedes medium. Red Bull two stop. Mercedes might have it with the one stop, and effectively Mercedes on one step harder compound can match the Red Bull pace. They don't have a chance at overtaking or attacking them, but they can match and they can stay close. But what's the strategy? We don't know yet.
Well, no, but I was the same opinion of you. As soon as I saw the bullies, that's what I'm going to call them now, the bullies, on the softs, I thought, oh, okay, it's going to be a medium and a soft strap. But then Mercedes, they came off, well, obviously Red Bull pitted first on the mediums.
Paris kicked that off. Yeah. On like lap like 23 or something.
And then when I saw the Mercedes go onto the hards, I thought, oh, they've done Red Bull here, because there's no way they're going to get those mediums to the end.
No.
And what happened? They got the mediums to the end. But still, yeah.
Yeah.
This was the most exciting part of the race for me, seeing how these alternative strategies sort of played out. Yeah, and at the same time, that's also what killed the race, because it turns out you probably could have put the wets on and just gone to the end of the race anyway.
Yeah, like F1 manager, beta F1 manager strat, you know?
Yeah.
But it's weird, because like here's my take on this, though. Like, the interesting thing is, when you have a weekend like this, or a sprint weekend, okay, sprint weekend is different because you get two races and you get to do a long stint, you know, like a third stint of a race on a certain tire, and you get to learn about that tire. But you remove the track time, nobody did any meaningful running on a hard, and nobody did any particularly meaningful high fuel running, in my opinion. Like, they're extrapolating, strategists are reaching, they're pooling resources, they're pooling numbers from other tracks, other races this year. And it leaves a lot of uncertainty. So my take is Mercedes did not have the confidence that soft medium was fast, and they didn't have the confidence that they could do a soft medium one stop. They said, you know what, we think the Red Bull are going to go for the fast strat. Why don't we go medium hard and make it work? And there's a couple of reasons, and I'm working on a video on that on Break F1. Should have it out Wednesday, on digging into the details. But we're gonna give you guys a little teaser here, and we're gonna talk about it.
Yeah, and one of the things that you mentioned during your live watch along, which I thought was quite interesting, is that it wasn't necessarily the degradation of the tires that was the issue, but it was the temperature window they were in. Could you explain a bit more for idiots like me?
So, yeah, I mean, typically, and it's not a linear scale, your softer tires work at cooler temperatures, and your harder tires, I've just had a huge brain fart because my cat's meowing outside. Well, so the softer tires can't get as hot, and the harder tires basically need more energy to keep them working. And that's one of the big things. So the harder the tire is, the slower your pace, and the window might be lower.
Is that,
or higher? The window might be higher. I've just had a huge brain fart. So the window might be higher. So for example, what we saw during the race was, you even heard Max talking to his race engineer about ways to put more energy into the tires, and you don't have to worry about saving the tires. You can push now to keep them working. Lewis on the hard was struggling massively. And you look at his lap times, that, you know, he did have to come through traffic, but when he'd go through traffic, he'd lose a lot of performance. And he just couldn't get those tires in the window to work well.
Did you think that is that related to the atmospheric conditions that we get in Mexico, or is that just a misnomer?
No, I mean, that will impact the convection or transfer of temperature from the surface of the tire to the air. But the overriding thing was putting enough stress in the tire to keep it going.
Okay. So do you think for next year, maybe Pirelli are going to go a step softer?
Possibly. But this,
or do you think they should have?
It was interesting. It just wasn't very good racing, because Ferrari turned their car down so much, and then the rest of the field were so shit.
Yeah. In regards to Ferrari as well, sorry, I'm jumping about here.
No.
Did you see there was a photo of the engine cover after Friday, and it was all bubbling and paint was all peeling off where it was overheating?
No, I didn't see that. Yeah. Some of the coolers were getting nuked.
Yes, it did look very toasty.
Ooh. But yeah. I just had a huge brain fart talking about tires there. It's been a long week. But
yeah.
One of the main issues with the harder compounds was keeping enough energy in them to keep the tire in the window. If you back off, and they talked a lot about lifting and coasting, which is at the end of the straight, you're lifting off the throttle and waiting, you know, 25, 50 meters before attacking the brake pedal. That saves fuel. It's a good way to go fast for a race strategy. Unfortunately, you lose a lot of tires and brake temperature as a result of that. So, yeah. And if they brought one step softer, that would have made it more interesting. But then possibly you would see nobody running the soft.
So
it's like you no matter what they do, there's going to be a suboptimal tire.
So have you looked? You probably have. I know this is you, but the stint times for Max on the medium were or every single one of his times in what 35 laps? Yeah, were all 122s apart from the VSC lap.
So basically, the more laps you do on a tire, it's losing a little bit of performance, but as you do more laps, you're burning fuel. So the tire degradation was matching the fuel effect and super consistent. In the medium, he was able to keep it in the window. And Lewis was just struggling on that hard tire. You could see the inconsistencies in his lap times, not an indication of him driving poorly, but an indication of him trying different things to try and get the hard tire in the window.
Hmm. Max's fuel and tire wear were in equilibrium.
Yes.
Do you like that?
Ooh.
Nice big word there.
Did you stroke the beard when you say that again?
Equilibrium. It's the name of my new fragrance that's coming out.
Oh, goodness.
It smells like cigarettes and stale coffee and disappointment. And you can buy it from Poundland this Christmas.
Oh, you're going to get Maddie to market it for you as well.
Yeah, maybe. So... I flipped that whole thing on its head and called Will Buxton a Waitrose Matt Gallagher.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
So there you go. I'm working my way to get blocked by every single sort of personality and journalist on the grid.
To be fair, the pre-orders for that fragrance are already coming in. I can see them coming through right now on the live stream, so that's pretty impressive. But yeah, so, like, realistically, that's kind of the crux of the race. Russell, at one point, was like, let me stay out on these mediums, and I'll go to the soft to the end. But realistically, Russell's pace was not good enough, and he was quite far away behind that. It wasn't going to impact his race to Checo, I don't think. The longer you stay out on that medium, he was losing pace to the Red Bulls on new mediums at a decent rate, so... I don't think that was going to work, and his pit wall said it wasn't going to work. And honestly, at this point, by starting on the medium, they had made their bed. That was their race. Mm. They played their hand from the race start, and that's the unfortunate thing about one stop. And they find out, you know what, it is going to be a one stop, and that's a one stop.
Yeah, they not too around exciting. And found out.
Yeah, exactly. But like people like I saw a lot of Merck fans calling for the heads of the strategists, and it's like, cool. Well, I don't think they were going to beat Red Bull on the same strategy, so maybe Red Bull got their tire figures wrong and they couldn't do the one stop. Or I didn't even know if they planned the one stop, but you see, it was one of those fuck around and find out. And if you can get to lap 25 or so, you might be in the window.
Yeah. So there we go. Our really super exciting strategy battle didn't really turn out too much, did it really?
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly.
Ferrari, like you say, they were in a world of their own. Christ, yeah. Well, that was painful for them this weekend. Tifosi, I know you're out there and you listen, sending you thoughts and prayers.
They were ripping into, you know, Team Carlos was ripping into Team Leclerc back and forth. It was
descended into civil war.
Yeah, exactly. It's like there's nobody else to be mad at. Let's be mad at each other. Fuck them. Yeah.
Yeah. That result for Ferrari and Mercedes now brings Mercedes to within 40 points of P2 in the Constructors' Championship.
Oh!
Two races blimey. To go. Crikey. Two races to go. A 40-point gap. Brazil and Abu Dhabi. Do you see the possibility that Merck might jump Ferrari for P2?
Anything's possible. I mean, Binotto said there's no reason they can't win the last 10 races of the season a while back. That was wishful thinking. And somebody, that was a paid acting job. I don't think they didn't get their money's worth out of that.
No.
I think it's possible. I think it's unlikely, but I think it's very possible.
To make the rest of this season exciting for me, I'm going to say yes.
Okay. I'd like to see it. But honestly, I'd like to see it.
I need Mercedes to jump Ferrari to P2 without winning a race, because then I'll lose the beard. So that's my excitement for the next two races.
Okay, put some skin in the game. Yeah. I like that. But yeah, to close the loop on the Mercedes thing, though, I think if they matched the strategy with Red Bull, they would have not, unless they got an overtake on track, they wouldn't have been able to overtake them. I just don't see it from the numbers and the single lap performance and what we saw of the long run performance. But yeah, Ferrari, no man's land. Let's get into some of the midfield shithousery, because there was a lot of it.
Go on, Bennett, yeah.
Right, what do you think of this one? Gasly dive bomb. Well, it wasn't really a dive bomb. He did lock up and he lost control. He went so wide that he forced Stroll off, and Gasly himself could not stay on the track. So
yeah,
if you're that team and you know that you've pushed a car off track and you've gone off track yourself as a result of a misjudgment of the braking zone or a lockup, these things happen. Do you hold on to the position and wait for the penalty because it's fucking coming? Or do you just hold the position and or do you get back?
Yeah, so
why did they not give that back? What the fuck was that?
Glad you asked that. Now, I do have to go back and double check this. So people out there may already know, and they can shout down the radio that I'm wrong. But I think there was a car just behind Stroll that was also racing them for position. So if Gasly let Stroll pass, there was a big chance that that car was also going to jump him.
Ooh.
That could be wrong. It could have been a blue flagged car. But I thought there was a car behind him that got right up to them that was possibly going to jump him if Gasly gave that back.
I can't see it immediately. No,
I could be wrong. Could be wrong.
Okay.
But if that's the case, then I can't. If that's the case, then I completely understand why he didn't give it back. I'd just take the fucking penalty later on rather than dropping two places.
It might have been Albon, apparently, but
I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't remember that at all. But anyway.
Yeah. In terms of the maneuver where he pushed him off, I decided to add to the toxicity of Twitter, and I said, oh, look, Gasly's taken the playbook of Max Verstappen there.
That was fucking clown. You're so biased, I know, man. How dare you? How dare you?
And it banged.
but he got a 5-second penalty for that, and I think that's fair. Like, he didn't cause any damage. He didn't DNF anyone. For example, Russell, on his latest attack in Austin, got 10 seconds for Sainz, wasn't it? Or is that not the case?
No. Russell got 5 seconds, didn't he?
Ah, okay.
Russell got five seconds for taking Carlos out in the US Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Sorry, is this what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then Danny Ric got 10 seconds for trying to send...
Ah, okay, we'll come to that one in a second.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, in regards to Gasly... I think it's all fair. I think Gasly would probably be the first to say that he lost control at that point.
What do you think George Russell would have said?
Oh, he would have been like, hang on, I haven't set up my soundboard.
Give it a sec.
He'd have said, call blimey, governor, he was all up in my chuff.
There you go.
He turned into me. Yeah, because you were going straight all the way to the outside of turn 5, mate.
Oh, he was right in my postcode.
So, yeah.
Oh, I love that. I think that was fair.
But Gasly needs to be careful now, though, doesn't he? Because
2 penalty points until a race ban, I believe.
Yeah, I think Gasly is just tired of the season, just wants that race ban. So
yeah, it'd be a good way to sit out. And it's a good way to get, you know, call young Liam up, get Liam some seep time.
Yeah, I think Gasly needs to go do some wild shit in Brazil so that he can take an early off season.
Yeah, but to be fair, that goes all the way into the start of next season, I believe.
Someone in the chat is telling me that his first penalty points will be gone in May 2023, so he even has to be careful at the start of next year.
Let's talk on some next stuff, because we've had a... I was happy during this race at one point when I saw Danny Ric. We're getting some peak Honey Badger back a little bit. That was a good drive from him, honestly. Very good drive.
It was... So this isn't a dig at Danny Ric. I'll just put that at the front.
Better not. I'll at all of his ex-girlfriends on Twitter that are...
Oh, okay.
I won't do that.
You always do this. You throw me right off. What was I saying? Yeah, this was a real Jekyll and Hyde performance from him, right? Because he absolutely bashed into Yuki, right? And people say, oh, well, Yuki shut the door on him. Whatever, fine. But he gets a penalty from that
And then he just sort of realizes, oh, fuck, I'm Danny Rick. Puts some softs on and just goes mental and wins driver of the day. I was just like, what is going on?
It's like, yeah, mate, you need to make up 10 seconds because you've just sent Tsunoda into the shadow realm. Oh, my God. Punched a hole in the side of that car, knocked him off, and then he goes for it. And there's a video floating around of him giving the finger guns when he overtakes. I still haven't freaking seen it, man. But he goes on to manage clearing Ocon by 10 seconds, so he holds on to P7, I believe.
Yeah, so he finished P7, got a 10-second penalty, remained P7, so... Good job, Danny Rick. That's one of your brighter performances recently, bless him.
Go on, lad.
But was this, again, so this strong performance one from him, right, and I'm going to get the old tin foil out, everyone, get ready.
Go on.
Did he get a strong performance out of this because he overrode the strategy and said, no, I'm doing medium soft? Because in the past, and I can't verify this. I've been told this by Daniel Ricciardo stands, so who knows how accurate this is. But a lot of the time, apparently, Danny Rick will ask for a different strategy and get denied.
Yeah. Maybe he... Did he feel in control again? Channeling his inner Carlos Sainz or George Russell?
Well, maybe he just said...
He definitely channeled some George Russell energy in that one, Jesus.
Yeah, maybe he just said, well, I'm out at the end of the season. I'm just not going to fucking come in and I'm just going to do my own strategy. But yeah.
Yeah, fine.
So whatever, fine. It worked for him. Yeah. What else you got?
So around lap 52, Alonso starts giving it all the beans. And you could tell he's leaving. He's leaving that team at the end of the season, but he's not happy because his engine is bleeding performance. He goes from being on pace with the Ferraris to getting devoured by the rest of the midfield. I mean, he's over 25 seconds behind the Ferraris, but he's matching them in pace. He's not doing too badly, honestly. And then his engine starts dying. And then he's coming into, I believe it's turn one, and the thing grenades itself, and he's so unhappy. I reckon he was so pissed off that it was shitting itself that he just pulled the clutch and revved it to shit.
Yes, I also like this theory that he's absolutely gone mental with it. But I was thinking, again, me thinking is a dangerous combination. But I was thinking, is Ferrari's strategic fuck-up throughout the year and ongoing issues covering up for the fact that Alpine have got an absolute dog of a car in terms of reliability this year?
I mean, if we weren't talking about Ferrari, we'd be talking about Alpine for sure.
Yeah, 100%. That's my theory.
Mm. No, it's not fun, but the Alonso and Hamilton...
I'm sorry to say that all the way for all four Alpine fans out there.
No, but it's I think everybody knows that, and It's the Renault's not a particularly reliable engine. It's just a fucking fact. It's not like that slander.
Never has been.
No. Right, but at least it's fast now. It's fast but unreliable. Before it was shit but unreliable.
Progress. Woo!
Exactly. But what about all the Alonso? I don't want to get into it too deep, but Alonso and Hamilton giving each other shit all week, and that's getting super petty. But social media war of 2022.
I just enjoyed it. I thought it was quite funny. I think Alonso enjoys taking little digs at Hamilton, and this time he got a response in terms of a thumbs up, which I thought was brilliant from Lewis.
Yeah, fucking get in there, Lewis.
Yeah,
he clapped back.
Yeah, I just think it's funny between them.
Yeah.
Alonso
seems very petty, doesn't he?
He's He has got a chip on his shoulder. He doesn't need to be, because Alonso is a good driver.
Yeah.
Even now, when he's older, or more elderly, shall we say, Alonso is a far better driver now than, let's say, I don't know, Kimi Raikkonen was in his last 2 years.
Yeah.
Kimi retired 2 years too late, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Alonso, I've not seen anything from him that would say, actually, Alonso, you've been here too long.
No. But he is getting beat by Ocon this season.
Because Alonso's car keeps exploding.
Don't bring in the facts to this discussion. My feelings can't take it.
Listen, I'm not saying it's a conspiracy theory or whatever. It's just facts. Alonso's car has been far more unreliable than Ocon's. So
I'm not going to argue with that. I just wanted to say that to stir the pot.
Yeah, well, you're a wanker, so.
Oh, what else we got in the race? Latifi, two laps behind. I don't want to say anything else about that. Aston and Haas looked completely nowhere this weekend. Just like fucking nowhere. And I don't even want to go on about it because I feel bad for them, honestly. But they're so inconsistent in terms of performance, and it sucks to see it because I would like to see more teams establishing the pecking order and chasing each other instead of being flip-flop every freaking weekend. I even put a graphic on Twitter of their qualifying performances all season, and it's just like, what's going on? There's some fundamental issues that they have not come to grips with that car or the operation of that car.
Rough for them.
Then Russell, Bottas converts a P6 in qualifying to a P10 result. Strong single lap pace, but just really couldn't hang on to that. Really,
No, he couldn't.
That's all right. I mean, it looks like he went super long in his first stint, and then just didn't work out. I don't know what else I would have done differently, because if he had gone short on that, he would have been stuck in a gaggle of cars going the same length as he had before. So a bit unlucky, but not enough pace to break out of that vicious cycle of getting stuck in the death traps there.
No, and we forgot. I think I forgot to say about this earlier, but Bottas out-qualifying Charles Leclerc.
Oh, he split the Ferraris, didn't
he?
Yeah,
yeah.
Boom.
Bang. Bottas is back, Mr. Saturday. The original. Yeah.
Go on, lad. Go on. Yeah, that was pretty good. Russell pops in the blimey fastest purple monster at the end.
Yep, he does. Yep. After
he'd been asking to go on to softs for ages, and they're like, all right, now at the end, lad, go on.
He was like, oh, these tires, I've got a puncture. Honest, governor.
He was milking that. He's like, please have a puncture. Please have a puncture. I just drove through. He did. This fucker deliberately drove through the debris that he found on the track just to get off of those shit hards.
Yeah, and then eventually he got his wish to pop on some softs for the fastest lap at the end.
Go on, lad.
Such was the gap between him and Sainz, I believe, that he could do that with no punishment. So,
yeah, I mean, but if they had a shit stop, he would have been eaten up by Sainz.
Well, speaking of shit stops, we did have a shit stop this week, didn't we? Checo, poor old Checo Perez.
Oh,
what was it, front left? I can't remember, front left or front right.
Yeah, that didn't really.
I say a shit stop. I think it was 5 seconds, but that is shit when it comes to Red Bull.
I mean, at that rate, he would have still fallen behind Leclerc. But, you know, if he had had a better stop, he would have actually ended up ahead of Hamilton when Hamilton stopped.
Mm.
That's how that went, basically. McLaren set a record for the season, 1.9 second stop on the 18-inch bad boys.
Yes, they did. A 1.98, I'll have you know.
Oof, go on, lads.
Fastest of the season.
I think Jonathan Wheatley's like, we got to take that, boys.
He will not be happy about that.
Red Bull have been spectacular pit stops, but it's cool seeing McLaren smashing some competition.
Getting right up there.
Go on, lad. Let's wrap it up. So I don't really care about the results of this race. It was interesting-ish. It was just like I just got blue balled the whole race. I'm like, is it a one stop or not? And then as soon as it was clear as a one stop, I'm just like, great. Yeah. I'm glad it's over.
But I fed some of the delusion on Twitter as well by saying that this is definitely going to be Red Bull, definitely going to have to pit again.
And
then they didn't. So yet again, I look like a fucking idiot on social media.
It's fine.
But I advertise the fact that I am, so if you believe me, that's your own fucking fault.
Yeah, you dumbasses. Shitbags. But Max Verstappen sets a couple records.
What does he set? What records does he smash out the park, Blake?
So Seb and Michael's 13 wins in a season, he surpassed it on to 14, and he has scored the most points in a season. But I do believe he will be the first to say that.
Boom.
It's not as difficult as it used to be because there's a lot more races.
It's not.
But like, you know, if you cut out the first part of the season, you know, the first couple of races and say, right, there's a season starting at race 4 or 5, it's pretty impressive still. It's not unimpressive at all.
No. If you look at his 14 wins up till now,
and you work out the percentage, I think it equals or is very, very close in terms of percentages to Michael's 13 in the season that he did it in. So if you look at it that way, I think they're very close.
Yeah, I think he's going to do it. He's going to get another win this season. Has to.
Yeah.
There's two chances, and both those tracks will go well for the Red Bulls. Like, none of the tracks go badly for the Red Bulls right now.
No, that's true. Very true. Well, I think that was the race, really, wasn't it, really? Everyone was shit apart from Red Bull and Mercedes.
Yeah.
And Mercedes were let down possibly by strategy. So, GG's. That was the Mexico Grand Prix.
If
you fell asleep during it, I don't really blame you. I think the only thing that kept me going was the possible strategy.
Yeah, that was the only thing. But I will say this. I'm going to do a little plug here. Watching the stream with you. You were there too, you fucker. Watching the stream live on Twitch with everybody is actually a lot of fun, hanging out and talking. I get a lot of enjoyment of talking about the race and what's going on with you guys and looking at the timing, having the conversations, you know, trying to listen to a couple different drivers, radio messages, and try to take some context and put like frame what's happening in the race, because some of the messages are a little bit cryptic sometimes. But that's super fun. So if you're into that, every Saturday and Sunday before qualifying and before the race, twitch.tv/break with 3 R's. And we have a blast. Everybody in the chat saying they had a great time.
Everything is more fun with friends.
Oh, yeah.
Especially camping at Le Mans.
Yeah. with Dr. Marco. Oh, I love it. Right. Is it that time?
Hit it.
Fraud Watch.
Thank you, Michael Kiss. That is so fucking beautiful. Yeah. So, Dan, this is the part of the show where you and I both nominate somebody for Fraud Watch. And let's pick
a bad thing from the week.
And if you're in the stream, I want to see your nominations for Fraud Watch as well. And if you're on YouTube watching this, I want to see your nominations. And if you're listening to this on a podcast platform like Spotify or Apple Music, go ahead and leave us a review and hit that 5-star right now.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this on the car on the way to work, just wind your window down and just shout it out to someone as you drive past.
Yeah, right now.
Yeah, they all know. They all listen. They'll understand. Yeah. They'll be like, oh, that's his nomination for Fraud Watch.
I will say this. When I was in Austin, I got to talk to a bunch of homies, and the number of people that I've known or I don't know, and they know of the podcast in the paddock who came up to me. He's like, dude, I love your podcast with Dan. I was like, it's nice to meet you. Hey, I'm Blake. Nice to meet you. I was like, I was fucking blown away. There was, you know, it wasn't like hundreds, but there was probably 5 to 10 people over the weekend. They're like, love your podcast, dude. People that I know.
There are literally dozens of us.
Yeah, there are literally 10 to 12 people that listen to this podcast.
Wow. It's opening doors. Listen, next year we'll be on the grid.
Lamar. Fraudcast. So who's on Fraud Watch for you this week?
Yeah, so Fraud Watch, right? So technically, right, my first Fraud Watch is like my unofficial Fraud Watch, and that's me for forgetting to do this for the last 2 weeks running. But I was ill and I was high on cold and flu medication.
And we did have some very, very excellent guests as well.
So that's my excuse. I'm sticking to it. My actual Fraud Watch is Christian Horner for putting on spectacled glasses during his COSCAP conference.
Oh, he needed that IQ boost. Right.
Listen, I have worked at Red Bull for 6 years. I've never seen him wear glasses once. Not once.
Are you being ageist, bro?
No, I've just never seen him wear glasses.
Me neither.
I don't think this is a real thing. I think this is fake spectacles to make him seem smart. And we've
talked to our study groups, and they say that spectacles are +2 points in likability. And I'm not going to say it. Never mind.
Yeah. So
anyway,
the 1,000 IQ glasses that I've never ever seen him wear before. Fraud Watch, Christian. I'm on to you.
Go on, lad. Go on, lad. Fair enough. So my fraud of the week, my Fraud Watch has something to do with Ted Kravitz. You know, he's been making some weird...
Oh, this could go either way.
He's been making some weird accusations and towing some interesting lines. But you're allowed to have an opinion. And anybody sending Ted Kravitz shit messages on social media because you don't agree with him, you're a fucking dork. Get a life. seriously, anybody that's harassing people on Twitter or social media because they don't like your take on something, fuck yourself, man. Seriously. Touch grass. But Ted, you're crazy. I don't agree with you all the time, but nobody deserves that, no matter what. So
if everybody agreed with each other, it would be boring.
Yeah, but you don't have to be a cunt either.
No, so that's us out.
Yeah. Oh, shit, I am a cunt. Anyway, we don't have an engine mode good boy sound yet. I think Michael's working on it, but Michael got us this week. This was good. So I told the story earlier. So Michael, who did, you know, our intro, and he did all that. He was like, I was looking at your data analysis thing on Buy Me a Coffee, and I got this phone call from my credit card, and it goes something like this.
Fraud alert, break F1 analysis, suspicious activity.
That's us, baby.
So, I mean, that's actually hilarious and entirely on brand. But this is the engine mode good boy, where we nominate somebody for doing a great job, someone or something for doing a great job this weekend.
Yeah.
Go on, lad.
Yeah. My engine mode good boy, I'm going to give it to the McLaren pit stop crew for that first sub 2 second pit stop of the year at 1.98 seconds. Well done, lads. Well done.
Very good. Very excellent. That's awesome. That's going to be a tough one to beat this season. What's the second fastest? It's close to 2?
You know what? I don't even know.
Well, we'll have to look at it. We'll touch back on this next week. So, yeah. I've got... I was going to say... So, I was going to give Russell my fraud watch, honestly, because he didn't terrorize anyone this week. But I've already done my fraud watch, and that's any people being assholes. My engine mode good boy this week is Ricky Bobby. I like seeing him smile, man. I miss Honey Badger. I hate to see that he's not in a car next season. He's had a tough season. But yeah, man.
He's being touted for a reserve role though, isn't he? Somewhere.
Yeah,
maybe.
But that's just not any fun. That's basically sitting in that's you end up in a paddock and you end up doing some sim work, probably.
I mean,
I'd fucking do it. I mean, to be fair, Alex, when he took a year out and was doing sim work, he's just a fucking good kid, though. I've got so much time for Albon. I actually saw him in the hotel in Austin. That was really nice. And I was like, who's this?
Did he recognize
dude?
Who you were?
Of course he did.
I'm just checking.
I worked with him like probably 30 weeks last year, so he better remember me, the dork. But yeah, he's a super nice dude, and he's got good work ethic and a good mental game for having a tough time. He kept his head on his shoulder. He's got a great drive. Alex is
true. Someone else in the chat has given their nomination. I'm going to shout it out because it is also a very good one, and that's Papa Perez and Anthony Hamilton.
Yo,
their little bromance they had going on this weekend.
Anthony's like, please don't kiss me again. Please don't kiss me again.
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah. I'm a big fan. So are we gonna wrap this one up tidy, like an hour and 27 episode? Not bad, hey?
Yeah, I think that's on limit for us, isn't it? Did we normally say 1 hour 30?
Yeah, it's the limit. I'm recording another pod after this, and I'll put that on Twitter. So if anybody's not following Break on Twitter or Engine Mode 11 on Twitter, that's a good way to keep in touch with us. Anytime anything exciting's happening, we'll put it there.
Yeah, and as part of the Red Bull agreed breach agreement, we have to cut down our podcast by 10% for 12 months anyway. So
yeah, and by doing that, we'll reduce next week's stream by 10%. So we'll be still like an hour 15. It's fine. You guys will get all the fraudulent content that you want. So can you guys do me a favor and go fuck yourselves? No, I'm just kidding. Have a great night.
Fuck off.
Anyway, that's the episode.
Boom.
Today with Amazon Business, Shannon Stuckey of Walburn Woodworking helped her team buy 63 circular saws.
Okay, Andy, take it easy.
Now she uses her time to focus on growing something big. Buy smarter, dream bigger. Visit Amazon Business, your partner for smart business buying.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.